Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by. We are about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Chat with the Labs conference call. Today's call is being recorded. You should have received charts for today's call. If you did not receive them, you may go to www.ibm.com Informix, that is Informix/webcast. Again, that is www.ibm.com/Informix/webcast. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Jerry Kazee, Director, IBM Informix Database Development. Mr. Kazee, please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and welcome everybody to September's Chat with the Lab. I think today's certainly an important one, and I know it'll be a good one. I'd like to spend a couple minutes, if I could, addressing a couple pieces of business. I wanted to remind any of you who are calling from Europe or who will be in Europe that we will be participating in the IDUG event, which is the first weekend of October in Vienna. It's the first time that Informix has participated in the European IDUG event, and we're really excited about it. I think we're going to have a great agenda, and if it's at all possible for you to attend, I think it's just a great opportunity to get a ton of training, some very deep technical dives into the technology at a very reasonable price. And if you're not able to attend IDUG in Europe, or you want to attend both, we'll also be in Anaheim in October for Information Management's first Information on Demand conference, which is the week of October 15th through the 20th. And again, I think it's going to be a great event. We've got some great Informix topics and both at IDUG as well as IOD, some experts from within IBM as well as a number of presenters from outside of IBM, both consultants in the Informix business as well as customers and business partners. So if you have not considered either of those events, I would really encourage you to take a look at them and consider attending. So today's event, today's chat topic is upgrading to IDS version 10. I think that if you're running an older version of IDS, if you're on version 7 or if you're on version 9.3 or 9.4, some of you on the phone may be running 9.2.1. It's really time that you take a look at version 10. You know, when we shipped version 9.4 3 years ago, we felt like it was the best release of IDS that we've ever shipped. When we shipped version 10 in March of 2005, we really, truly believed as an engineering organization that we'd shipped a version of IDS that was even better than 9.4. And over the last 18 months, you know, we've done nothing but continue to focus on enhancing the quality and the performance of that release. And in July, we released version 10.0.UC5. We're as an engineering organization, we're extremely proud of it. We've gotten tremendous feedback from a number of business partners and customers who've upgraded to version 10 and who have seen benefits to their business in terms of performance gains or increased functionality, reliability, and availability. And in today's chat with the lab session, Carlton will not only take you through the migration process, which is very straightforward and very simple, but also talk to you about capabilities that are available in version 10 that are not available in version 7 and version 9. Today's speaker is Carlton Doe. Carlton is a long-time Informix expert. He was involved with the technology prior to joining the Informix company and has continued to be involved with the Informix technology since we became part of IBM. Carlton is one of those guys that are not part of my lab, but I wish that he was. And you know, we're lucky that as an organization, and I think you're lucky as a business, that we've got people like Carlton Doe who are not part of the development organization but have a tremendous amount of knowledge and expertise around Informix technology and understand how to work with end-user customers and partners to enable that in order to give them a competitive business advantage. So I think that you will get a lot out of today's session. And so with that, I would like to turn the session over to Carlton. Carlton Doe, again, he's from our sales organization. He's a senior certified IT sales specialist and somebody, again, that I think that you can trust. And with that, Carlton, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, thank you, Jerry, for that nice eulogy. You know, I feel the weight now of actually producing something of value for everybody. As I was telling Jerry and the others who were monitoring the call prior to this beginning, for some strange reason, I am extremely nervous today in coming before you over the phone. Seems that I can do okay when I speak to customers face-to-face. I don't know if it's the ability to look in people's eyes and see whether or not I'm communicating or not, but doing this over the phone is a little different for me. So if I sound a little jittery, you know, I ask for your indulgence in advance. It is a pleasant rainy day up here in Toronto. For those of you who might be sweltering in the heat someplace else, it's overcast and rainy. And a special hello to some people from Cairo who I believe have dialed in for this, and I will simply say shokran to you for joining us. So if you have the presentation in front of you, we're going to go ahead and move to slide 2. And throughout the presentation, I will be making an explicit call to the slide numbers so you don't get lost. For the most part, I will be following the course of the slides. I will be deviating partway through to give you some impressions and thoughts that I have vis-a-vis migrating and preparing to migrate. As Jerry was mentioning, IDS version 10 was within the development community and is, at least within the sales community, from my perspective, a watershed event. A number of customers, both within the partner community and the end user community, have been expressing concern for a number of years about what IBM was going to do with the technology. And as a company, IBM did not have a very good story for a number of years. And I say that not that the technology wasn't going to continue, but the commitment was not as strong as it should have been on a marketing and sales perspective, to put it kindly. There were a number of people within the greater IBM management community who felt that Informix customers could simply migrate over to other products in the portfolio and they wouldn't notice a difference. And they've now seen that there are distinct differences between IDS and other products within the portfolio, and there are things that IDS can do that no other engine can do. And they've seen that the Informix community continues to grow. We are increasing in sales by a significant percentage year on year. The revenue is growing at a very healthy rate. And a number of people have sat back and said, wow, they've evaluated what we've got and said, you know, there's really something here. And version 10 is the first byproduct of that, if you will. And as we look forward to V.next, the next version of Informix Dynamics Server that will be released, you need to be aware that this is just a precursor of what's to come. there are significantly more resources being allocated to Jerry and Jerry's organization to build an even better release for VDOT Next. I certainly don't know everything that's going to go into it, but occasionally I've been privy to a feature or two that they're considering, and all I can say is hold on to your hats, folks. If you think large chunks in 9.4 was great, or the ability to encrypt data within the database that's available in version 10 is really neat, wait until you see what comes out in VDOT Next. It's going to be incredible. So the commitment there from IBM in terms of development and marketing and so forth has changed radically within the past year. And it's as if IDS is back on afterburners. And just wait. There's going to be some incredible stuff coming. So as we look at slide two, here's the general topic list that I'll be covering. We'll begin briefly with some of the new technologies that are available in version 10 and why you might consider upgrading from whatever version of Informix you're currently running. I know there are some people on the phone who are currently running Standard Engine, and if you've parsed through the slides, you will probably notice that there's nothing in there about how do I get from Standard Engine to version 10. That's part of what I'll be covering when I kind of branch off a little bit from the slides. Then we'll actually talk about how you migrate. What are the steps involved in doing an in-place migration or even a non-in-place, if you will. And then look at a case study of one customer who actually went through and did an in-place migration and some of the steps they took in terms of preparing and executing it. Finally, at the end, there will be a short questionnaire. We'll ask you to respond to some questions about the session. Just remember, when it comes time to decide on whether or not the speaker was excellent, it's supposed to be, I believe, star one for very, very good. So just, you know, file that away. But then once that's all done, we will open up the forum to general questions and answers where you can ask about anything, really, regarding Informix V.10, migration, and so forth. So moving to slide number three, the focus around version 10 was in these areas. Number one was improved performance. One of the stumbling blocks that a number of customers had in moving from version 7 to version 9 was that there appeared to be, and in many cases there was, a difference in performance. Version 9 just didn't seem to be as fast as version 7. Part of it had to do with the fact that it was simply a larger engine. There was more stuff, if you will, and I know that's a highly technical term, in the engine to support things like extensibility. And some of our code paths were not as efficient as they could have been. And in addition, people needed to understand and learn how to use some of the new optimizer features that were in there. Well, in version 10, we've managed to fix almost all of those issues. So across the board, you should see significantly better performance in moving to version 10 than you did in version 9, such that it should meet or exceed what you're seeing in version 7. There are a number of technologies that were added to increase the availability and the scalability of the engine, and I'll talk about those briefly. I've already mentioned from a security aspect, version 10 brought the ability to actually encrypt data within the database, which can be a very powerful tool if used correctly to secure your enterprise from both internal and external threats. If you move to slide 4, this is just a graphical representation of some of the key features that are in version 10 and even version 9. As I mentioned, in version 9, one of the big hallmark features of it was the ability to have large chunks and large files, output files for utilities. Significantly added to the ability to store data within an instance and make it usable for decision support purposes, or even simplified administration. I remember when I was an IDS administrator, I had to struggle with the 2 gigabyte chunk limit as I was building a rather large database, and it seemed like I spent more time managing chunks and where they were and trying to consolidate chunks into DB spaces than anything else. Well, with 9.4, you know, you have the ability now to create a 4-terabyte chunk if you want. You know, if you can find a disk drive that is that big, you know, go for it. But it's more than just a gee whiz factor. It's the ability now to take disks within your disk farm and use them far more intelligently than you could before, making your life easier and providing higher availability to your customers. As you look now moving into to version 10, in conjunction with these large chunks, you now have the ability to create DB spaces that have different page sizes. Always a feature with blob spaces and smart blob spaces, it's now available within standard DB spaces. Well, why would you want to do that? Well, you may have rows that are larger than 2 kilobytes in size. One of the great things about IDS is that we manage that intelligently for you. So we put the first portion of that page, in that row in what we would call a header page, and then we had the remainder of the row in one or more trailer pages. And we used, you know, forward pointers to you know, link all these pieces together. Well, those forward pointers also took up space. And it actually cost more from a disk space usage perspective to have rows longer than 2 kilobytes within the system. So if you know that you're going to have a 4K row size, then build a DB space that is 4K and that uses a 4K page size and eliminate some of the overhead. The other thing that can happen is that with a larger page size, we can have far more compact indexes so that you don't have to parse through as many levels of the B tree to get to the data that you're looking for. And there's a whole broad use of larger page sizes that you know, we can talk about at some other time. One of the other great things that occurred in version 10 is that PIT-TLR, which is an acronym for a point-in-time table-level restore. When I was an administrator, I would have killed for this. There were times when a user who had direct SQL access happened to do a delete statement where 1 equaled 1 and completely wiped out a table. And I had to go through a convoluted process of restoring DB spaces and capturing the table and then re-restoring the DB space to its current version and you know, reloading the table from the extract that I did. It was a very kludgy and error-prone process. With version 10 now, you can actually restore a single table from a level 0 backup with the associated logical logs. A tremendous feature. Not only can you restore the table, you can even migrate it to a different instance if you want, to a different instance on a machine running a different operating system. So you can restore a table from an AIX instance to a Linux-based instance if you want. There were a tremendous number of features added to enterprise replication, including the ability to have it resynchronize tables for you, which I know a number of customers have been looking for. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, IDS is continuing to grow. We're continuing to add significant features to it because the commitment is there from the customers to use it and from IBM to develop it and sell it. So, you know, you should feel proud and excited to be part of the Informix family. As I mentioned, there's some great things coming in V.next, some of which you'll need to be on version 10 to take advantage of. So I would encourage you to look at migrating to the latest release of the engine, which is why we're talking today. So if you move to slide 5, this is basically just a recap of some of the things I've already mentioned. In our internal tests, we run TPCC and TPCC-like benchmarks. We are seeing about a 15 to 20% improvement in OLTP performance over that which we're seeing with version 7.3. So while we can't publish these TPC benchmark information because they're not formally audited, you know, the proof is in the pudding, or proof is in the pudding, and it's, you know, the performance is there. Some of the things that have yielded this performance are technologies such as the shared statement cache, where statements that are executed repeatedly don't have to be re-optimized every time they come through. You know, the optimizer can store the query plan and then immediately execute it the next time it sees that SQL operation. We've changed how buffers are managed within IDS in terms of keeping the most used data in there, not a whole slew of index pages, which was previously the case. One of the neat things in version 10.0 was the ability to allocate memory within the virtual portion of shared memory for non-PDQ operations that require or would operate better in memory as opposed to on disk. And I'm specifically speaking of sort and join operations. Prior to 10.0, if you had a sort or a join, only about 128K of that sort and join stack was managed within memory, and the rest was done in temp space. Well, with 10.0, you can actually set a parameter within the onconfig file to configure, or at least allocate, up to 25% of DS total memory, another onconfig parameter, for in-memory sort and join operations. So you can, depending on the size of the operation, completely bypass any disk I/O overhead in executing that type of operation, which, you know, helps with just day-to-day sorts and joins, but also assists in building indexes. So, and the rest you can read about later, so that I can move on here. If we look at slide 6 in terms of high availability features, one of the neat things in 9.4 was the ability to have the instance automatically allocate additional logical logs for you if you ran into a log full situation. This most commonly occurred in the case of a long transaction, and it doesn't actually eliminate the long transaction, but it can mitigate the implications of it, in that if you have some sort of a transaction that begins filling your logical logs or your automated log backup process fails, rather than have the instance suspend operations until you back up the logical logs, the instance can dynamically add more logs for you so that you can continue processing. I've already mentioned some of the things that are available in enterprise replication, the ability to have it resynchronize data for you. Templates also became available in version 9.4 and version 10, such that instead of having to go to every single node in your ER cluster and configure all the tables and the replication rules and so forth, you can set up a template and make all the definitions on one node, and then have that node push all of the definitions to the other nodes, have those nodes create the tables if they don't already exist, and also use these same templates and the master replicates that support them to at any time verify that the other node's replicates are, you know, configured the way they're supposed to be, and if not, change them to get them back into the correct schema format and refresh the data. You can now also use enterprise replication and high availability data replication on the same node. They used to be mutually exclusive. You had to decide whether you wanted hot site failover or distribution of data. You can now have both. And in that, HDR will now push over from the primary to a secondary any index that might have become corrupted on the secondary, so that you don't have to drop it on the primary and recreate it. What else is on here? Alter of replicated tables, while it was always supported in HDR, has now been supported in ER. So you can, within a master replicate, change the schema for a table and then have that replicate, that master replicate, push those changes out to all the other nodes that participate in the replicate. And again, there, I'm just skimming the surface. There are so many things here. If you move to slide 7 in terms of scalability, you know, this is kind of an old slide. You know, we've always been able to support a tremendous number of users, a tremendous number of transactions, with very, very little in terms of hardware requirements. And when you look at big chunks and some of the other features that are available in version 10, you know, the ability to have more than one table more than one table fragment in a single DB space. I'm getting tongue-tied here, as well as some of the other changes in smart large objects. You know, version 10 just continues the story of you know, scalability when you need it, how you need it, for whatever reason you might need it. Moving to slide 8, you know, in version 9, we were able to encrypt the communication stream between a client and the server, or I should say the instance, to protect against, you know, people snooping on your network to trap either passwords. Well, at that time, it was just passwords and so forth. We then enabled in version 9 to encrypt the entire communication string. So the data that went back and forth between the instance and the client was encrypted. Now in version 10, you can actually encrypt character data within your table such that it is protected against people who might have direct SQL access, you know, looking up what somebody's payroll records might be. We also have other checks in there that make sure the binaries haven't been tampered with, that the permissions and the group and user IDs haven't changed. The ability to use what are known as pluggable authentication modules, or PAMs, to have single ID and single password sign-on that also, you know, within the enterprise, that also includes access into database server resources. When you move to slide 9 now, it talks about some of the new features that are available in terms of administration. Version 9 brought in the ability to redirect the chunk layout during a restore. So if you are, let's say, moving from one system to another, or you have to change hardware and path names change, and you didn't use symbolic links but you actually used valid paths, you can now use a redirected restore to repath where a chunk might, or where a chunk is built during a restore. Within OnBar, we've now given you the ability to use all of the tape that might exist on a device by setting tape size to 0. We've also changed and made more intelligent how the install of multiple products affects shared libraries that are put on disk. It used to be that every single time you went to install a new product, you had to check the release notes to see if the 10 rule or the net rule was in effect. And by that, I mean you either installed the tools, engine, and then networking products, or you installed the networking, engine, and then tools in order to get the libraries loaded in the correct order to prevent conflicts. That's now been eliminated. You can now install, you know, the engine first, then the networking products, or in any order. If you're running 4GL on the same machine, you can add in the application environment and not have to worry about which one got loaded first. We've also added some new flags and output from OnStat, and made the setExplainOn far more descriptive in what it can display to you. What else is there? Version 10 brought OnTape to standard I/O. Instead of going to tape or to disk, you can actually go to a pipe, and then take that pipe and maybe put it through a compress utility, and then redirect it to a TAR or a CPIO, or even pipe it through a remote shell to another server who is doing a physical level on tape restore to start HDR. So So you don't have to go to tape or to disk to initialize HDR. You can actually do a concurrent backup and restore, and then once you finish with that, you can just have HDR bring over what few logical logs might have changed. So again, there's so many things here, and I feel like I'm like a rock just kind of skipping over the surface of the lake here. Moving to slide 10, this gets into things that can make application development either easier or richer. One of the great things in version 9 and 10 is this whole object relational technology that you can now take and use within your application to make them richer and to make your life as an administrator easier. For example, you no longer have to build master detail tables if you want. You can handle those types of relationships with named row types and with collection data types. So rather than doing all these multi-table joins to get, all these third normal form relationships that have previously been the de facto standard, you can do one single I/O, saving on, disk hit and get everything you need. There have been the ability to order by values that are not listed in the select by list. You know, it used to be that you'd have to put all the columns that you wanted to use for either a join or a sort by operation in the select list, and once you brought them in to your operation, you discard the values you didn't need. Well, you no longer need to do that. We also support the sequences technology, which is something that Oracle users and DB2 users have had for a period of time, a different way of creating unique numbers other than the serial number. The nice thing about sequences is they're multi-user as opposed to a single-threaded serial number. So you can actually get your unique IDs even faster using a sequence than you can putting a serial field in your database. So let's move to slide 11 here. And we're getting into now the actual upgrade process and migration process. And this first slide here talks about if you're on specific versions of an engine, there are in some cases the ability to do a direct in-place upgrade from that version into version 10. But before we talk about that and some of the other upgrade and migration paths, what I'd like to do is step back for just a second and talk about some of the other things you might want to consider doing during an upgrade and a migration that aren't specifically called out here. And I guess the biggest thing that I would suggest you look at is your design and implementation of your database server environment. This is particularly true for those who might be migrating from online version 5 or standard engine. There are a number of technologies that are available to you in Informix Dynamics Server that you didn't have before, and in some cases existing technology is even richer than you had before. As you look at migrating to version 10, take the time to look at how you could use those technologies and redesign your database environment. For example, it would make sense to use fragmentation, to take your tables and divide them into DB spaces intelligently, either putting a single table or putting tables in a single DB space or fragmenting tables across multiple DB spaces based on business rules so that the optimizer can intelligently parse through the data much quicker than it could in earlier versions of the engine. It might make sense to look at even redesigning your tables. As I mentioned, you now have access to new data types that can, for example, reduce the need to have master detail type relationships. Or even if you choose to have master detail tables, that within your detail table, you can use a collection data type to concatenate all your detail rows into just one row. So that even though you may be retrieving multiple attributes, You don't have to go through as many IOs. You might choose to use distinct data types. For example, you may have a requirement to store values in ounces or pounds or gallons. It used to be your only data type available to do that was a decimal or an integer. And there was and then you'd have to put a descriptor column in there as well saying this value in the decimal field is a gallon value or is a weight value. Well, why don't you define a column called gallon that inherits the attributes of a decimal? And with this gallon data type, you can create a table that says, the person bought 15 barrels of, 5 gallons each or something like that, or you sold 15 gallons of fuel oil to this customer. And that gallon column cannot be added to any other column than another gallon column, preventing application errors and, inappropriate data being returned to a customer or to an end user because they inadvertently added, the wrong two columns together. So you can use some of this new technology to make your applications more secure, more robust, more consistent with the business view of the data. As I've already mentioned fragmentation, this becomes particularly important when you look at some of the newer technologies that are available in terms of disk farms. I know many Unix administrators simply think, just throw it into a RAID 5 environment and everything will be okay. I'll tell you this up front. If you're running RAID 5 for OLTP, you might as well just step back and shoot yourself in the head because you're not going to get the performance out of version 10 or any other, Informix database server than you could if you did some very precise and some very well thought out disk and table management. I certainly understand the needs of business to reduce their hardware costs as much as possible, and while RAID 5 seems to give a tremendous amount of protection, with the least amount of hardware cost, it is extremely expensive from an IO perspective. And if you can talk your management and your Unix administrators into allowing you to have, direct disk access to devices within the disk farm or even RAID 0 or RAID 1 sets at worst, you can take these discrete logical units and use them very intelligently in laying out your logical units called DB spaces and fragmenting your tables across them so that you can get much better I/O performance than you could before. You'll get a significantly better performance boost out of redesigning your database and laying it out on disk than you will from tuning instance parameters such as shared memory or locks or anything else. How you lay your data out on disk has a much greater impact. And in a migration from Standard Engine or Online 5 or even, IDS version 7, take the time, if you can, to look at this and build it into your migration plan and set this up properly. When I was a DBA, I used to go in and develop new databases with the assumption that whatever the business customers telling me they needed was going to be completely different in 6 months, that however much data they told me they were going to need would be twice or three times that. And I'm sure all of you have run into the same situation as you've developed and supported applications. In your migration, take advantage of this time now to review what the current status is and build a new environment for these existing apps to give yourself a much easier way of administering them and your users even better uptime and security, I guess. So anyway, moving back now with my little soapbox here, or back off my soapbox here to slide. Hold on here. Okay. Slide 11. If you are on certain versions of IDS, you can do a direct in-place upgrade to version 10, specifically version 7.24.3.1 of, or 7.24 and version 7.31, 9.21, 9.3, and 9.4. If you're running any versions of those, you can do a direct in-place upgrade from that version to version 10, and in one of the upcoming slides you'll see how that happens. If you are on version 7.2.2 or earlier and you would like to do an in-place upgrade, you first must go to version 3.1 and then from 3.1 to version 10. Reason being is that between 7.2 and 7.2.2 and 7.3.1, there were some significant changes made to the, we'll just call it the structural overhead to the instance, how pages are laid out on disk, in the root DB space, within logical logs. I mean, there were a number of changes that occurred in the infrastructure that's somewhat hidden from you as an end user. And those infrastructure changes need to be made in a 7.2 or a 7.2.2 instance prior to migrating to version version 10. Likewise, with version 9.1, when we moved to 9.2, there were a number of changes that occurred, and even more occurred in version 9.3. So if you're moving from 9.1, you need to first move to 9.3, or 9.4, and then you can move from there to 10.0. Migrating between 32 and 64-bit versions of the engine, if you're on, you know, 7.2, 7.3, or 7.2.4, 7.3.1, 9, you know, 9.2, 9.3, 9.4, again, can be in place. If you want to move from any of the other versions, again, we'd encourage you to move to as late as possible, 7.3.1 or 9.3.0.32, then go to the 64-bit release if it exists, or you can move to 10.0 and then go from 10.0.32 to 10.0.64 if you choose. Migrating from some of the other versions of the engine, such as online and standard engine, as you'll see, I think it's in the next slide or the slide after that, I can't remember here right offhand, can be accomplished in some cases either with an in-place upgrade going through multiple steps, or unfortunately in the case of standard engine, you're going to have to do some sort of a data unload and reload to get there. So as we move to slide 12, this just covers what I've already said. If you're running any of these versions of the engine and you want to do an in-place migration, where can you find the reference material for that migration? Obviously, if you're migrating to version 10, you should look at the 10.0 migration guide to 9.30 and 7.3.1. Look at the appropriate migration guides there. These migration guides and all Informix documentation is available at ibm.com/informix/library. You can download all of the manuals in either HTML or PDF format, in addition to release notes and machine notes, so that you can look at what you're getting into before you even begin. As you move to slide 13, this is just a graphical representation of the in-place upgrade migration path. Notice that for the first time, online 5 is shown here. Online 5 can be upgraded in place, if you will, as long as you migrate to 7.3.1 first, or some version, some supported version of 7, and then from there doing an in-place migration to version 10. So even those of you who are running smaller. Usually online 5 is used in smaller environments. You can very easily move in and use the full power of IDS version 10 and the features, you know, such as fragmentation, encryption, and so forth to within your database environment with just a few with just a couple of in-place migrations that would probably take less than an hour to put into effect. What is not shown on here, as I mentioned before, is Standard Engine. Unfortunately, Standard Engine doesn't have a direct migration path into IDS version 10. The best option for you who are running Standard Engine is to take advantage, as I said, of the ability to redesign your environment. Maybe you won't be using any of the new features such as named row types or things like that, but you can take advantage of fragmentation, and you can take advantage of being able to put indexes in different DB spaces than your tables, so that you can utilize parallelization. You know, for you, you have a really great opportunity to work through this process, because unfortunately you're going to need to unload your data into a series of ASCII files, most likely using DB export and DB import, to migrate into IDS version 10. You know, I wish there was an easier way of getting there directly. But unfortunately, that's the only solution we have for you at this moment in time. And I don't believe, it's certainly not in our development plans that I know of, to give Standard Engine users an in-place upgrade path into version 10. For those of you who might be using non-Informix database products, either from within our own portfolio or some competing products, there is the migration toolkit, which is available for you. And unfortunately, I have just forgotten what the URL is. But if you go to ibm.com/informix, there will be a link there to the MTK or the migration toolkit, which would help you migrate an Oracle or a Sybase environment or other database environments directly into IDS that handles a large part of the schema migration and the data migration for you, utilizing IDS technologies. So if you're at all interested in considering migrating away from Oracle, you know, there's a tremendous amount of functionality and keyword equivalency now between IDS and Oracle. It's become very easy to migrate Oracle apps to IDS through the toolkit, as well as Sybase environments. So I'd encourage you to take a look at that technology. So moving to slide 14, if you were to do an in-place migration from version 7.3.1 and up, the process is relatively simple. You would need to get your server ready by going through some of the pre-migration steps, and I'll talk about those in the next couple of slides. And then you would need to install the new binaries. Now then, a word of advice here, and I am going to use the standard disconfiguration of user inform, I should say directory path of /user/informix. One of the things that I have always tried to teach administrators when I've talked about how you should administer your instance or your engine, I guess I should say your database server. That's the new term now within IBM, is we don't refer to IDS as an engine. It's a database server. So anyway, as you administer your database server, is that you should install major releases of the server in separate directories. It enables you to do forward migration as well as backward regression significantly easier. So hopefully all of you have installed your database server in /user/informix/ 7_3.1 or 7_2 or something along those lines. I generally don't recommend, though you can, that you have a user informix 7.3.1_UC1 and then a separate directory for UC2 and another directory for UC3, though you could if you want. But I generally just say, have a directory for 7.3.1, and as you look at installing IDS version 10, that you create a user informix /IDS_10. You would install the binaries there and do all of the pre-configuration steps that I'll talk about in a minute, like modifying SQL hosts and the onconfig file and so on and so forth there. So that covers step 2 on this chart. Moving to step 3, obviously you would need to repoint your environment variables such as informixdir and so forth to your new environment. Hopefully, you haven't changed informix server or any of the other parameters that you might have set, such that they point to the new location of the version 10 installation. And then you simply turn on the instance with an onInit command. Word to the wise, onInit minus IVY is not your best option at this moment in time. It is not your friend, because that would, obviously wipe out your instance. But all you need to do is just turn on the instance with an onInit. I would typically or would generally recommend that you turn it on with an onInit minus J, a new flag that's available to you in version 10, which brings up the instance into single user mode. And by single user mode, I mean that only user informix or members of the informix DBSA group, which is typically group informix, can access the instance. And while the instance is coming up into the single user mode, do a tail on the message path file. You'll see a number of messages in there that will say that the instance is being converted from whatever your existing version is to version 10. So it will say something to the effect of, upgrade in progress or conversion in progress or something like that. It will most likely also say that sysutils, sysusers, and other databases that might have been created in the root DB space are being upgraded and converted. A word to the wise here, a very big note with an exclamation mark in red for you. If you attempt to connect to the instance prior to seeing that the conversion complete message has appeared in the message path file and each of the two or three, we'll just call them sys databases, have been completed. So if you attempt to access the instance before you see those two messages within or those two sets of messages within your message path file, you will corrupt your instance and you will lose it. So just because the message path file says that the conversion has been complete, if your sys databases are still being rebuilt, you cannot touch the instance. Otherwise, it's time to get out a level 0 backup and start all over again. So that's step 4. Once the conversion has completed, you would go through the standard post-conversion process of running a series of on checks and so forth to make sure that all your data and index pages are intact. And you would take a level 0 backup so that you have a known good backup at the beginning of your new instance environment that you can use to roll back to if you need to. Okay. I'm getting these messages pop up on my screen here, so apologize for just a second. Okay, so moving on to slide 15, we're now going to look at each of these steps in a little bit more detail. Moving to slide 16, this is standard marketing fluff that says that you can install IDS on any of the most commonly used operating systems that are out there. IDS actually has a broader range of operating system support than other products within our portfolio. So if you're using any of these operating systems, you won't have a problem in migrating to version 10. Moving to slide 17, some things to be aware of. The full binary of version 10, if you were to install it, can take up to 500 megabytes in size on disk. Now, there are ways of reducing that. There you can go through and eliminate certain subdirectories, such as the demo directory and the GLS, the global language support directories, if you wanted. That would, you know, significantly cut down on the amount of disk space required to install IDS. In the GWIS, wouldn't it be neat department, wouldn't it be neat if you were able to, during an install, during the initial install, tell IDS which major subsets of functionality you'd like installed, such as replication or demo or global language support or other features, so that you didn't have to go through and do all of this work after install. That sounds like it would be a really neat thing to have in a future release of the engine. I'll have to make sure we mention that to the developers. So anyway, right now the engine can take up to about 500 megabytes of space. We generally recommend that instances be configured with around 250 megabytes of space. Now, that's just, that's just a number. I have certainly run instances very successfully on much less than that and very successfully with much more than that. But for a ballpark number that you need to give management, you can, 250 megabytes per instance is a good starting place. When you do an in-place migration, there will be some extra overhead that occurs on disk that you need to take into account. In some cases, your tables and some of the DBSpace overhead structures will grow a little bit, because one of the things that occurs in version 9.4 and into version 10 is that indexes are no longer created in table. In earlier versions of the instance, when you created an index, unless you specifically said fragment by and then put the index in another DB space, your index and table pages were intermingled in one set of table extents. In 9.4 and version 10, indexes are now separated such that data pages are in one set of extents and indexes are in another set of extents. This can cause DB space usage to grow. If you're migrating tables that have in-table indexes, you may see additional pages allocated for these indexes to be separated out into. So as you look at doing an in-place migration, make sure that you have plenty of room within your DB spaces to accommodate any of the overhead that might occur. In the slides here it says, plan for about a 20% growth. Again, that's just a swag. It's a value, a high water value. Some people have seen that, a number of people have seen significantly less, but to be safe, plan for about that amount. Anybody who's heard me speak or heard me, teach and train administrators know that one of the statements I always make is I'm a belt and suspenders DBA. I have backups of my backups. So I will always try and give you you know, a lot of breathing room, a lot of fudge factor, just so you don't run into that oh crud type of situation where you're between a rock and a hard place and have to figure out some way of digging yourself out. So anyway, those are some of the system requirements that you ought to consider. As you move to slide 18, again, just more detail on some of the overhead that is going to be used in a migration. You know, as I mentioned before, your SysMaster, SysUtils, SysCDR, other databases, other Sys databases in the root DB space are going to be rebuilt. So make sure you have some room in your root DB space for the rebuild to take place. these rebuilds are going to be logged. So make sure that you have enough logical log space. We've already talked a little bit about having free space within your DB spaces and so forth. If you're really worried about it, here's an SQL statement that you can run to look and see how much free space you have. Excuse me. Other things that you should take into consideration are obviously client connectivity in terms of, you know, do all the clients know about the new instance and the new machine if you're doing this migration to a new box? You know, testing your applications, you know, including your backup and recovery applications, be it Tivoli or Veritas or whatever you might be using, to make sure that they interface properly with version 10. If you are running replication, depends on which replication you're using, and the impact it will have on your upgrade process. If you're using enterprise replication, you will obviously need to temporarily suspend that node's replicates as you do the upgrade. If you're doing HDR, the safest way of handling it is actually to bring the nodes into standard mode, do the upgrade, and then reinitialize again. Again, there are other ways of handling it, but being the belt and suspenders person that I am, the safest way of doing it is just to take both nodes into standard and do the upgrade, then put them back in touch with each other. Again, have a backup plan. So as you go into an in-place migration, don't have one level zero backup. Have two. And if your database is small enough or your instances are small enough and you can afford the maintenance window, do a DB unload or use the high-performance loader and extract all your tables. Again, have a backup of your backups because the fastest regression process, if you run into a problem, may well be simply restoring from backup as opposed to using the regression functionality within the engine. You know, the regression functionality in the engine works. You know, we've tested it. It's good, but being the belt and suspenders person, I would much rather repoint my Informix DIR to my 731 installed binaries, roll back or restore a level zero backup that I took before I started this process, because at least I know that that backup was taken and I have known good data structures there. So anyway, definitely plan for failures and have the insurance there to handle it for you. Obviously, you wouldn't want, I'm moving now to slide 20, obviously you wouldn't want to do any of this without on a production environment without testing it first. So, you know, find a machine, you know, obviously as close to your production size environment as possible so that you can do true application tests. But if that's not available, you know, run through in-place migrations a number of times in a test environment. Again, if you run level zero backups and you install your binaries in a separate subdirectory, you can take your backup of your 731 instance, for example. You can flip your Informix DIR parameter to 10.0. You can turn the instance on. You know, walk through all the post-migration phase. Shut the instance down. Repoint Informix DIR back to 731. Do a cold restore. And start all over again. So you can do this multiple times. And then we've also, you know, I've also talked about the backup plan. So as we move to slide 21, part of the pre-checklist or the pre-migration checklist should be making sure that you understand how your instance is operating. That would include looking at the query plans from your most important or your heaviest use SQL statements. So run set explains on these. Capture what the query path looks like that the optimizer is using. Do a DB schema minus HD to get a look at what the distribution of your data is within the tables. Again, I mentioned at the very beginning, use this as an opportunity to look at your table design. If you see that you have a significant, if the distribution of data inside your table is not what you anticipated it should be, use your migration to build a fragmentation plan that takes into account what these values are that actually exist as opposed to what you planned for. You know, an on-check minus PR will dump the contents of the reserved pages of the DB space, but it doesn't grab everything. So make sure you also capture an on-stat minus D and other on-stat parameters so that you have a complete view of what your instance looks like before you migrate. Moving to slide 22, this again is the belt and suspenders approach to looking at your tables. There are a boatload of onsets that you could run if you wanted to. A lot of them get into what I would consider the minutia. For example, do you need to know partition statistics? Well, not really. But the commands are there. If you really, really want to dig down into the minutia prior to upgrading, yeah, you can pull out partition statistics, or you can pull out thread stack statistics. Well, you know, those thread stack statistics are only valid for as long as the thread is in existence. Once you migrate, the thread's not going to be there, so why would you need it? I don't know, but it's there if you really want to go through it. You know, obviously make sure you understand what the I/O load is on your system. Again, this goes back to intelligent DB space and database design. Use this opportunity to make that even better. Obviously, you should, as I mentioned before, not only have an SQL output of or an SQ explain out of your query plans, but you should also know how long they take. So if you're seeing, you know, any type of a difference between 10.0 execution and, you know, the previous version of the execution, you can go through and have an understanding or at least begin to diagnose why. Moving to slide 23, this now is getting to the mechanics right before you do an in-place migration. The first thing is to replace or to remove any outstanding in-place alters. This is very easy. There's actually as you go through, you can do on checks on your tables that will show you how many in-place alters are still outstanding. You can fix that by simply doing an update table, you know, set column equal to column where, you know, 1 equals 1 or just update column equal to column. And it will go through and touch every single row and make all the in-place, you know, put all the in-place alters in that still need to be taken care of. You need to close all your current transactions. If you can have users log out, you know, that would obviously be the best way. But if not, what you would need to do is shut the instance down with an on mode minus KY, then bring the instance back up into quiescent mode. And what will happen is in coming back up to quiescent mode, any of the open transactions that might have been recorded in the logical logs will be rolled back. So once the instance actually gets up into quiescent mode, all transactions, whether open or closed, will actually be committed or completely rolled back. Then, you know, once you're in quiescent mode, you can either shut it down and continue on with the upgrade process. Or if you want, you can go through and do a series of on-checks if you'd like, some of the on-checks that I've mentioned before. If you're running enterprise replication, You're going to need to flush the queues and so forth and take the replicates or at least suspend replication as, you know, advised in the ER guide. If you're doing HDR, as I mentioned before, I would take the instance into standard mode on both sides, the primary and the mirror, and do the upgrade and so forth. In any event, before you do anything with the instance, you know, create one or more level zero backups, as well as, you know, DB unloads or high performance loader unloads and so forth. You'd install the binaries, read the release notes, see if any kernel parameters need to be modified, and so forth. Moving to slide 24 and then to slide 25, once you copy the binary off of media down to disk, you have a choice of using install server, which is our preferred method, or you can use a graphical utility with the, you know, using Java and so forth to actually put the binary in the Informixter that you've specified and brand it with the appropriate permissions and so forth. If you look at slide 26, if you've ever installed an Informix instance, you already know about all of these files, which you might or might not need to modify. It is possible to take a 731 onconfig file and use it in version 10. Simply copy it over. I wouldn't recommend it. There are a number of new parameters that are available in the version 10 file that you ought to be aware of, and some of the other parameters have been deprecated. Those deprecated parameters, of course, would be ignored. But you know, where appropriate, you know, make copies of these files and then migrate the contents into your version 10 environment. Moving to slide 27, then 28, because I'm running out of time here. You know, you need to make sure that all of your parameters are set up so that you can turn the instance on. Most of, you know, these are new these are not new, and you already know how to set those. Slide 29's 30, you know, I've already mentioned you simply turn the instance on and you watch the message log for the conversion completed as well as the sys database rebuild process. And then you're into the post-migration steps on slide 32. If you've migrated into version 10, the statistical values that existed for the optimizer are no longer really valid. So you should do an update stats low, drop distributions, then go through and do an update stats high on SysMaster, and then whatever your normal update statistics process is on all of your other databases. You know, obviously run through and do an on-check on all your data and so forth. If you're using HDR and ER, you'd want to turn those back on again. I'm on slide 33. I've already talked about this earlier. If you're migrating to a different OS, you are going to have to do some sort of a DB export because we don't support migrating between operating systems because of the binary representation of integers and so forth. So you would need to use the appropriate unload and reload mechanism to move between a different OS, and this is no different than what you were doing if you were migrating from Standard Engine here. Slide 33 just talks about some of the different utilities you could use. As I mentioned, you can use enterprise replication and actually upgrade enterprise replication nodes in place, if you will. Slide 35 talks about that briefly. I would encourage you to look at the enterprise replication manual for how you would do that. Slide 36, and I apologize for rushing. We have just a few minutes left, and I want to open this up to questions. Talks about reversion. You know, there is a command that would enable you to revert back from from version 10 to your earlier version if you would like to. My preference, of course, if it's at all possible, is to do a level zero restore if you found any problems during the upgrade process, because at least you know that level zero was created with a known good image of the of your instance. Slide 37, both 36 and 37, talk about the reversion process. It's basically an on mode minus B command with whatever the version number is you would like to revert back to. Slide 38 talks about some of the new reserved words that have been added into the instance. That's perhaps the biggest gotcha that people have in migrating applications, is that new keywords are or new reserved words exist, and so they have to change or rewrite some of their SQL statements. This is not a comprehensive list. You know, look at the release notes through the various versions that you'll be migrating through to look at all of the new reserved words. The rest of the presentation you can study on your own. There is a customer use case, the checklist that they went through when they migrated to version 10. In some cases, they had instances that were in 9.2.1 and 9.3, and they were migrating in some cases just up to 9.4 and in some cases to 10.0. Some of the steps that they went through are not required if you're moving to 10.0. For example, they did an on mode minus BC 1 and 2, which enabled large chunks in a 9.4 environment. Well, in 10.0, large chunks are enabled by default. But what I'd encourage you to do is look at this checklist. Use it as a guide for your environment. For example, you may not need a million locks. You may need significantly less. But it's what they went through, or at least the process that they went through in upgrading their environment. So with that, I have babbled on for far too long. I'd like to turn it back over to the moderator. He's going to ask you a couple of quick questions, and then we will open this up to your questions.
And ladies and gentlemen, we will do a brief electronic survey. Please wait until you've heard all of the selections before making your selection. Question number one, do you currently have InfoMix applications running which need to be converted to IDS version 10? Again, that is, do you currently have InfoMix applications running which need to be converted to IDS version 10? For yes, press star 1. For no, star 2. Again, that is star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. And we will pause for just a moment. Question number 2. If you have applications to be converted, which InfoMix release do most of the applications run on? Again, if you have applications to be converted, which InfoMix release? I apologize. Which InfoMix release do most of the applications run on? Standard engine, press star 1. On line 5, press star 2. IDS version 7, press star 3. And a non-InfoMix database, press star 4. Again, for the standard engine, press star 1. On line 5, press star 2. IDS version 7, press star 3. And a non-InfoMix database, press star 4. And we will pause for just a moment.
Rufus?
Yes, sir.
This is Carlton. Can we extend this call another 10 or 15 minutes to handle questions and answers?
Yes, sir. That is not a problem.
Okay. Thank you.
And on to question number 3. The level of technical detail in this presentation was, again, the level of technical detail in this presentation was, for about right, press star 1. Not technical enough, press star 2. And too technical, press star 3. Again, the level of technical detail in this presentation was, for about right, press star 1. Not technical enough, press star 2. Or too technical, press star 3. And we will pause for just a moment. And on to question number 4. The speaker for this teleconference was, for excellent, press star 1.
You can stop there, Rufus.
For good, press star 2. For fair, press star 3. And for poor, press star 4. Again, the speaker for this teleconference was, for excellent, press star 1. For good, press star 2. For fair, press star 3. Or for poor, press star 4. And we will pause for just a moment. And on to question number 5. The overall teleconference rating was, for excellent, press star 1. For good, press star 2. For fair, press star 3. Or for poor, press star 4. Again, the overall teleconference rating was, for excellent, press star 1. For good, press star 2. For fair, press star 3. Or for poor, press star 4. And we will pause for just a moment. And question number 6, the final question. Would you like someone from IBM to contact you regarding IDS version 10? Again, would you like for someone from IBM to contact you regarding IDS version number 10? For yes, press star 1. For no, star 2. Again, for yes, that is star 1. And for no, star 2. And we will pause for just a moment. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we will handle our question and answer session. Today's question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please firmly press the star key, followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. We will come to you in the order that you signal. And again, that is star 1 if you would like to ask a question. If you are on a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute button is disengaged so that your signal can reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. And for our first question, we go to Rich Campbell.
Yes, hi. That was a nice presentation. Question would be, what is your embedded base in the field today as far as version 10 goes? I know it's been out since 2005, but how many customers do you have using it, and is it really been field-tested?
Has it been field-tested? Absolutely. Some of the largest IDS users in the world are in production on version 10, and you can probably guess it at who some of those customers might be. You know, we always refer to them. They're using version 10. They're happy with it. There is an extremely large networking company who's actually migrating all of their applications over to version 10 from a competing database product. The stuff is out in the field. It is road tested. It is roadworthy. What is the percentage of customers? Unfortunately, I don't have those exact numbers. There is a large percentage of our customer base that is serviced through partners and OEMs and so forth. And we just get a revenue report from them that says they sold X amount of our product, but we don't know if that went to one customer or 50 customers. This much I can tell you, though, from just a revenue stream perspective, we are seeing enormous growth. And if you can use that as as any indicator of how well IDS is doing. You know, in many respects, we've never been better. And I'll just kind of leave it at that.
Yeah, that's good news. Just one more general question. The positioning by IBM of 10.0, is it still being positioned as the OLTP engine as opposed to XPS? And has there been any consideration, you know, for single node DSS using version 10.0 and maybe migrating some of those features that are specific to XPS, you know, for decision support over to version 10?
Sir, valid question. IDS certainly has the power to handle single node DSS type environments, particularly if you look at some of the add-on functionality that is available with, say, the CopperEye indexing data blade, which enables you to build significantly larger indexes or even more indexes without the overhead that's involved with B-tree indexes. What you're asking, though, is a philosophical question that is, you know, unfortunately being battled about within the marketing types within IBM. Yes, IDS is the OLTP engine of choice for IBM. You know, there is obviously DB2, and there are places where DB2 would be a better choice for an OLTP environment. It does have some functionality that IDS does not have, and vice versa. There are things that IDS has that other products in our portfolio don't. So as you look at choosing a database server, the correct question should be, which technology should I use? You know, what's the right fit for us? And within the IBM sales community, the message that has been going out for the past year and that you should be hearing from your IBM sales representatives is exactly that. What is your need? And we will put the correct product in to meet that need based on your functional requirements. Now, not all IBM sales people, you know, quote, get it, end quote, yet. You know, they still have their legacy attitudes. From a DSS perspective, you know, a DB2 has been positioned from a marketing perspective to be the DSS server for IBM. So if you are creating a data warehouse environment, you should use DB2. Now then, if it is a single node, there is no reason why you couldn't do the same type of work within IDS. If the technology is there, again, you can certainly use it. From a marketing perspective, though, we will not market IDS as a data warehouse engine because that would conflict with the primary marketing message for DB2, that of being the data warehouse engine of choice. So are we going to be moving all of the XPS features into IDS? No, because there's some of them that you know, are really specific to data warehousing, and given that that conflicts with the primary marketing message for DB2, it's not going to happen. But, as I said, the power of, you know, of IDS is more than adequate. Again, when you look at some of the add-on technologies that are currently available and will be available in V.next, you know, there's certainly no reason why you couldn't take an XPS environment and run it within IDS, you know, particularly from a scalability perspective. I mean, you're talking 8 petabytes of data. You know, that's 13,000 libraries of, or no, what is it? It's several thousand libraries of Congress worth of data that you can store in a single instance. I mean, you can create insanely large data stores within IDS. You can use CopperEye to index them, and you'll get OLTP-type speeds in a DSS environment. So, yeah, you can do it. And many of our XPS customers are actually taking that route. They're actually migrating to IDS because they find that the hardware requirements and the administration requirements are more attractive than other products in our portfolio.
Thank you.
Yep.
And for our next question, we go to Aquilis Lorenka.
Hi, sir. I have a little question. We have a customer that has installed DataBlade. He's already has DataBlade that are supported by the version to where they want to migrate. But I wonder if there is any consideration at the moment that the database engine upgrade, is it enough just to upgrade the engine, or we also need to do another register of the database on the migrated environment?
Okay. Again, the belt and suspenders DBA in me would tell you that the safest way of handling it is to unregister the data blade, do the migration, and re-register before you bring the, or reinstall the blade before you bring the instance up. That would be your safest way of doing it. In the migration guide, there is a section that specifically talks about blade migration. And this is another good story about IDS version 10, is that in conjunction with its release, many of the data blades, both internal and third party, have been upgraded. There are new versions of them that are available. And in V.next, I don't think I'd be shot in saying that there will be some data blades and data blade functionality that previously was for charge that you had to pay for, which will now be bundled or free within the engine. So, there's a good story there.
Thank you.
Sure.
And for our next question, we go to Malcolm Whelan.
Carlton.
Hey there, you old geezer.
How are things?
Doing well, thank you.
I was interested in your comments about disk layout.
Yes.
I'm getting a lot of grief from the IBM hardware people because I'm asking for physical access to it. They're telling me I've got sands and all this sort of thing coming out of my ears. That should give me much better performance than we could ever get any other way. You got any comments on that?
Well, whether you're talking about direct connected or some sort of network attached storage, that battle is over and done with. The market has moved to some sort of network attached storage. Now, whether you think that's the right way to go or not is immaterial. But the battle's over. So now, the next battle for us as DBAs is logical unit access. And your Unix administrators are going to want to throw everything into a RAID 5 environment, convert the cabinet into one huge LUN and just give you a slice of that, which from an operating system file perspective may be adequate, but from a database perspective isn't. So if you can talk your Unix admins into giving you discrete LUNs, if they can go through their SAN environment or their direct attached disk environment, whatever it is that you've got, and if they can give you JBOD, just a bunch of disk access so that you can ping an individual drive, great. If they can only give you RAID 0 or RAID 1 environments or RAID 10 environments, take that. But, make those environments or those LUNs as small as possible in terms of the number of physical devices used, so that from a logical perspective, when you design your chunks and your DB spaces, you can lay them out and take advantage of the hardware paths within the disk farm to maximize your I.O.
Yeah, basically the same as I thought.
Right. There's, back in the day when everything was direct attached storage, it was a little different. Now that we're in these massive disk farm environments, like I said, the battle's over. Whether it's better or not, whether it's faster or not, network attached storage is the de facto standard. So let's live with it. Let's work with it. The underlying premise hasn't changed, though. You want to manage your I.O. to as many physical devices as possible. Let the instance be aware of as many of those devices as possible. And that includes if you can get JBOD, that's the holy grail. If you can get them to give you direct single device access, you turn on mirroring within the instance, and not only do you have failover capabilities in the case of a physical device failure, but the instance will actually parallelize your read and write operations you know, out of the same table. It will read from the mirrors and write to the primaries. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. That's, you know, that's the holy grail right there.
Thanks, Carlton.
Sure.
And for our next question, we go to Floyd Wellershouse.
Yeah, Carlton, now that was a Star One presentation.
No, thank you.
just a quick question. On slide 23, my attention was elsewhere for a second while you were talking about removing out outstanding in-place alters.
Yes.
And so I missed what you said about that.
Okay. One of the things, hold on here. Internally here, we use this instant messaging program called SameTime, and I turned it on so that people could give me grief if I was running over time, which they did, and now I'm getting all these other messages pop up. So let's see here. Slide, what was it, 23?
23.
Okay. What happens, as you probably know, you can do certain types of alter table statements that are created or executed in what we call in place, which means that as a row is either added or updated, the new version of the row is modified to either add the attribute or attributes or remove the attributes. And so when you look at a table, if you were to do a dump of a table that had more than one in-place alter operation executed against it, the actual layout of the rows is going to be different as you move from row to row to row, depending on whether or not it was inserted or updated before or after any one of those in-place alter statements. It makes conversion significantly more secure if you don't have all of these, I don't want to call them fragmented, if you have all of these, if you have multiple versions of the same row, okay, it makes conversion to the new format and reversion back, if necessary, very, very difficult. You know, one of the things that we, at least I always talk about in designing a database environment is you want one version of the truth, okay? As you go into a migration, you just want one version of the row, okay? You want all of your rows in the table to be absolutely identical. So if you have in-place alters, you want to get rid of them by doing a very basic statement that says update table set row equal to row. And, you know, what it will do is it will go in and just overwrite the existing value of that column with the same value that existed in that column. But because it's doing an update statement, if that row has any outstanding alters that need to be executed against it, it will happen at that moment in time. Then when the statement completes, all your in-place alters are in and in place. You do that to all of your tables. You now have that one version of the truth that I was talking about before. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, it does. I don't think it's makes a lot of sense for us to update all of our tables. We have a terabyte database. Every row and every table, it seems like that would take forever. I wonder if there's a way of finding, you know, identifying which tables might have in-place alters in them.
Well, there is an on-check command, and unfortunately, I'm going through a minor Alzheimer event right now, and I can't remember what the flags are, but it actually does identify, tables with in-place alters that are unrealized.
Oh.
And so that would isolate those tables where you would need to do this type of an upgrade statement.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
And we go next to Swami Day.
Yeah, hi. I have a question about the dblocal thing. With prior to version 10, there was no restriction on the dblocal. Like if your database is of a different locale and if your environment is set to the default, you can still connect to the database. But with version 10, they have restricted access to the database, like if your database is of a different locale. All my applications, like I have multiple applications which talk to even SQL Server and Informix. So because the application uses a default locale, there has been a data mismatch in the database. Like, is there a way we can get rid of it in version 10? like still be able to connect to the database even though the DB local is different?
So you're talking about representation of monetary values and date values?
Yes, like we collect news from all over the world, so the language we input data is in different languages.
Mm-hmm.
So like when we create the database, we create the database in different DB locales.
Mm-hmm.
So previous to version, like even in version 9, we use UTF-8 for the
right.
database.
Mm-hmm.
When I upgrade to version 10, I cannot do a DB access unless I set my DB local environment variable to UTF-8.
Ah, okay. I was wondering, the question I was going to ask is, are you using UTF-8? I know of a couple of customers who have run into issues running UTF-8, and unfortunately, I am not really well-versed in global language support. I understand the concept and at least understand in general terms what it is you're running into. At this time, it's my understanding that there isn't going to be a change to that. You know, one of the things that happened in moving to this configurable page size within version 10 was a much richer implementation of Unicode, such that you could have multi-byte character sets and so forth, which is why we need to be much more, we being the database server, need to be much more careful and much more aware of the byte size of the character set we're going to be receiving in order to store it properly. Before, it wasn't an issue. It was just 8 bytes, period, end of story. But now that we fully support multi-byte character sets, you know, the locale needs to be set properly in order for the data representation to be written properly to disk using the correct character set. So that's why you have the restriction or the, I wouldn't call it a restriction, that's why you have the requirement of setting DB locale properly so that we can read and write data as, you know, appropriately into the instance. And so there isn't any change planned. I don't, at least not one that I know of. If you would like to send me an email, though, with that question, I'll ask development. I wouldn't hold my breath, though, if I were you.
Okay. The reason is, like, we can't upgrade to version 10 right now just because of this restriction.
Mm-hmm.
My application won't work.
Again, what I would do is encourage you to work with your IBM technical, you know, IBM Informix technical representative to see if there's some way of fashioning a workaround. You know, there's so many variables that could come into play here. It's not something that I could diagnose or help you with, you know, in the context of this phone call.
Okay.
And understand, I'm not trying to brush you off. There's just too many things that, you know, I would need to know and understand, and it would be much easier for somebody working with you, you know, who's more familiar with your application environment and can, you know, solve
right.
the problem for you.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And for our next question, we go to Mike Bader.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello.
I'm currently running IDS 9.4 UC3 on AIX 5.1 maintenance level 8, and there's been some discussion on comp databases and Formix about going to version 10 UC5 on AIX 5.3 at the base release. And apparently there's been some kind of bug, or I'm not exactly sure, in the fixes to go to AIX 5.3 maintenance level 3. Have you heard anything about that?
Unfortunately, I haven't. Tech support would be the best place to go and get that type of an answer. IBM has a broad range of products, you know, operating systems, hardware, applications, and so forth. And for better or worse, I've kind of just focused on administering and managing IDS instances, so I really don't know what's happening on the operating system front. If there are tech support would be able to look at existing cases with that operating system combination and be able to tell you what they have seen and what their recommendation would be. I'm sorry.
No problem, Carlton. I'll do that. Thank you.
Sure.
And for our next question, we go to Alexei Sunkin.
Hello, it's actually not Alexi, it's Zaki, but I'm working with Alexi. I have a question about the point in time resurrection of tables.
Sure.
If you're resurrecting a table which is bounded by some referential integrity constraints, what's going on over there in case you're not resurrecting the other tables? I mean,
okay. What happens in what we call a point in time table restore is you actually restore the table. You restore the table's data not into the original table itself, because that table might have been dropped, for example, but you actually create a target table that you dump the data into, and then at that point, once the table's data has been restored, you can decide whether you want to rename the table to replace an existing table that had been dropped, or if you want to select out of it the rows you want to repopulate the existing table with. So don't think of it as a one-for-one, exact restoration of the original table. It's actually a copy, a data dump from that table. The other thing that you should be aware of is that in doing a point-in-time table-level restore, you are not required to restore the entire table. You can, if you choose to, only extract part of a table's collection of attributes. If you only want the first three columns, that's all you need to grab. And in addition, you can, through the point-in-time table restore, actually collect attributes from several different tables to create a single, quote-unquote, restored table. So what you need to do is go to the backup and recovery guide. There's a whole section on this point-in-time table-level restore, and it discusses how it works and what the requirements are. There will also, probably around the first of this year, be a Red Book published by IBM. That's a publication. It's a free publication. People can either, buy it for whatever the printing costs are or download it. That will discuss the new features in version 10, including the point-in-time table level restore feature. And I know that because I just wrote that chapter.
Okay. And the second question, about the communication encryption.
Mm-hmm.
Is it similar to SSH, or just tunneling something similar to SSH, or is it something completely different?
It's not tunneling at all. What happens is, as the stream goes through the Informix communication libraries, an encryption process takes place so that as the data then comes out of the library and goes on the wire, it's not easily readable by people who might be snooping. Now, I don't know, how many bytes are in that encryption, whether it's number of bits, whether it's a 64-bit encryption or what it might be. I just know that it's better than nothing. And may, in fact, be quite secure. I don't know what the bit level is. And then when that stream reaches the database server on the other side and goes through the communication libraries there, the decryption takes place. Obviously, it's a private key type of encryption because there's no published key for it. It's something that we manage inside the context of our libraries.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
And we go next to Richard Tobin.
Yes, Carlton. We're going to be migrating to a Linux environment running under with an Intel chip. We just wanted to know whether IDS10 will take advantage of a dual-core processor.
Yes, it does. It all depends on how you configure your CPU VPs. And believe it or not, this is an area of significant testing, both in the user community and within the labs. you know, one of the things that I was not aware of is that a dual-core processor, to use that as an example, is not really as powerful as a single-core processor. It's just that there are more of them there. They just happen to be running at a slower speed so that the aggregate seems to be faster. So a lot of people have been saying, oh, you know, dual-core processors, it's the holy grail. Well, it may or may not be. It certainly works from a hardware perspective because, you know, the chips tend to run cooler since each individual core is running slower. But it really depends on how the operating system treats those cores. Does it treat it as two distinct processors or not? And if the operating system sees them and treats them as two distinct physical CPUs, then you can configure your instance to take advantage of that. Now then, is there a big difference between running IDS on a single processor and a dual processor machine? You know, let's just assume that we're not talking about cores at all. So you're running between, you either choose a single CPU VP or two CPU VPs. Yeah, there could be a change. You may see, you know, some performance improvement. Will it be double what a single one is? Most likely not, because when you turn on multiple CPU VPs, you also turn on what is known as mutexing, which is the overhead communication mechanism that allows the threads to communicate with each other across the virtual CPUs. And that, you know, takes up processing time within the instance. Where IDS really gets up and starts to run is when you start configuring with four CPU VPs and more against the equivalent of four or more physical CPUs, whether those are dual cores or you know, discrete core processors. So yeah, definitely use a dual core. You know, try it and see. You know, it may actually be faster to run with a single CPU VP, but certainly try it with two, even try it with three CPU VPs and see what happens.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
And we go next to Zev Berzin.
Hi, thanks, Carlton, for a great presentation.
You're welcome.
On slide 18, mentions about OnCheck-Me to compress expense. And I'm wondering whether it works on IDS-10, because I've heard rumors that particular OnCheck is not working on IDS-10.
Well, hold on here. If you want to give me about 2 seconds, I'll turn my instance on and we'll find out.
Okay.
Now, this is, unfortunately, I'm running on Windows because I'm just working off my laptop from a hotel room here, but let's see what happens. Da-da-da-da-da. Okay. I honestly haven't heard that, but let's find out. Yeah, I got some sort of a syntax error. Let's see what it comes up with. Yep. Yeah, the ME is not supported syntax in version 10. Of course, since we're talking about migrating to version 10, you know, this syntax is probably supported in other versions of the engine, or excuse me, of the database server. So you are correct.
It just gets me like a little apprehensive about using that in other versions.
Well, as I said before when I was covering this slide, this is the belt and suspenders approach, and there are certain things that I personally wouldn't do, this being one of them. Okay. If you have a lot of space available within your DB spaces, you don't need to worry about this. Now, if your DB spaces are 99% full, yeah, you need to worry. But if you've designed your instance properly so you have plenty of room in your DB spaces, this is one of those steps that you can ignore and move on. I have never done it in any of the instances that I have upgraded, ever.
And let's say you do have a poorly designed table with multiple extents, sticky like 100 extents or greater.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the best route to compress those extents?
Well, understand, that's a different issue, okay? What we're talking about here, at least in slide 18, was talking about at a DB space level. Within a table level, you can go ahead and migrate over. All those 100 and some odd table extents are going to come over without a problem. That the answer to that question is just general DBA skills. You know, unload the table or migrate the table to a different DB space and resize it, appropriately, and go from there. If you have enough disk space within your DB space, you know, you can do a alter table, you know, change fragmentation, and change your extent sizes or change your fragmentation scheme. One of the great things in version 10 is that you can have multiple fragments of the same table in the same DB space. So, you know, you don't even have to do intelligent disk fragmentation. You can use that functionality to rebuild your table. Let's say you've got, in your table you have some sort of one of your attributes has very low cardinality. Let's say it's, you know, a flag indicating male or female. So what you do is you say alter table, you know, add fragmentation, you know, whatever the syntax is, alter table, add fragmentation, you know, where column 1 is equal to male is in DB space 1 with this extent size and this next size, where value is equal to female in the same DB space with this extent size and this next size. And it will rebuild the table. This is definitely not an in-place alter type operation, but it will rebuild the table in that DB space. It will inherit the new sizing characteristics. And then when you're done, it will delete the old table, freeing up, you know, all of those other extents.
True. I just that the unchecked hash me is just like so simpler, and it works very fast. I mean, when it does work, the older versions it just work so quick.
Yeah.
Okay. The next question is a bit cheeky, perhaps, but in the migration, what you were speaking about before, there's a migration toolkit. And you have potentially from other database vendors to Informix. Or they have one from Informix to DB2, and I was just wondering whether there's one from DB2 to Informix, or is that
Well, the Informix to DB2 was created prior to the acquisition. It's a legacy toolkit that existed before IBM bought us. We are not in the business of, and we shouldn't be in the business, of robbing Peter to pay Paul. If you're running an IBM server and you're happy with it, it does what you need to do, stay with it, regardless of what it is. As you look at new functionality, the sales message that you should be hearing, if the sales team is following the direction that they've been given, is what is the correct technology to use to solve the problem. We will not solve our problems or make IBM a better company if we're constantly poaching DB2 customers over to Informix or Informix customers over to DB2. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of customers' resources and dollars. Put the right technology in there. Will there be a DB2 to Informix migration toolkit? No. Again, we're not going to try and rob Peter to pay Paul.
Okay. On that note, just one final thing. What would you recommend as a preferred database server for large, let's say like 80-90% OLTP running on Sun box?
You will find that you will get better performance out of your hardware running IDS than you will other products within our portfolio.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot again for a great presentation.
You're welcome.
And we go next to Dufin Simic.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the nice presentation.
You're welcome.
And I'm looking for that red book, what you mentioned, and I cannot find What is the title of that red book? What you mentioned?
Yes. As I mentioned, it will be available probably this coming January.
Available yet.
Yes. We are writing it right now. As I mentioned, I mentioned it in context of the table level restore. I just finished that chapter last night. So it's still in the process of being created.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. I would imagine that when it is published, that the IIUG will, you know, be aware and publicize the fact that there is a new Informix publication available.
All right. It means that it's coming, yeah?
Yes.
Thank you.
There's actually two red books coming, one on IDS in general and one on using replication. Enterprise replication in its various forms and high availability data replication. So there
mm-hmm.
will actually be two books.
Two red books.
In and around the January time frame.
Well, that's great. All right, and have a nice day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we have no further questions on our roster. Therefore, Mr. Doe, I'll turn the conference back over to you for any closing remarks.
Okay. Well, to those of you who have stuck through to the bitter end, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. I know it's valuable. I hope that this has given you the information you need to think about and actively begin planning for a migration to a really great piece of technology. Please talk with your IBM technical representatives. They'd love to help you in the planning and the actual execution of this. And I think you'll be very pleased with what you see. And look forward to some great things that are coming in the future. IDS is alive and doing extremely well. And we've got a great story to tell. And V.Next is going to be the next chapter in that story. So thank you, and have a pleasant day.
And ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's IBM Chat with the Labs conference call. We do appreciate your participation, and you may disconnect at this time.